I'm Tom Hall. Welcome to Midday. Today, a conversation with Baltimore City Mayor Catherine Pugh. With a long career in Maryland politics, this new mayor is no stranger to Baltimore's old problems. Last month was the deadliest January in the city in nearly 40 years. What can be done to assure that a homicide a day isn't the new normal? And what about the specter of 1,000 layoffs in the Baltimore City public schools? Plus, what will the mayor do if a bill raising the Charm City minimum wage to $15 lands on her desk? And the Cross Street Market was on track for a major facelift before the developer reportedly walked away from the deal. State Center is stalled too. But development in places like Remington and Hamden and Harbor East continues to thrive. What are Mayor Pugh's plans for lifting up other neighborhoods in our city? Midday with the mayor, coming right up after the news. Good afternoon, everybody. I'm Tom Hall. Happy Valentine's Day, and welcome to Midday with the Mayor. Baltimore City Mayor Catherine Pugh joins me here in Studio A. She's been on the job since the first week of December. She campaigned on a platform that included lowering crime, increasing police accountability, and better educating our city's young people. Now, a little more than 2 months into her tenure, the city is facing a staggering homicide rate that was already on the rise before Mayor Pugh took office, and a budget deficit that could leave Baltimore City schools severely understaffed. But there is also much to be excited about as the city's 50th mayor begins her tenure. New development in Remington has breathed new life into that historic neighborhood. Bike lanes and a bike share program are making two-wheeling a much more viable option here in our city. And young people continue to see Baltimore as a hip, quirky place to plant roots and build a career. Mayor Pugh will be here for the hour today, and a little later in the show, we'll take your calls and questions. Our number here on Midday, if you want to get online, 410-662-8780. That's online for the phones. If you want to get online on the internet, midday@wipr.org is our email address, our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. Also want to tell you that we are, for the first time here in at least my tenure here at Midday, we are broadcasting the first part of our program on Facebook Live. You can catch us on the WIPR Facebook page. Madam Mayor, it's great to see you. Happy Valentine's Day.
Happy Valentine's Day to you, and happy Valentine's Day to your audience as well.
So let's talk about this surge in crime that we are experiencing here. I mean, it's virtually a murder a day since the first of the year, the highest in almost 40 years. I know this is something that's very much on your mind and the mind of Commissioner Davis and many other leaders in the city. Do you have anything in particular that you attribute this to?
Well, let me just say first, thank you for inviting me to be here. And I think I campaigned on a lot of platforms, whether it was dealing with homelessness, the 76,000 people who are unemployed in our city, the 3,000 people who are homeless in our city, you know, looking for methods and methodologies and ways to improve those situations, because I believe that when you lift the least, you lift all of us. But when I think about crime in the city, I think Baltimore is indicative of many communities across this nation. And I think you have to look at all the characteristics that now are Baltimore. When you think about the number of drug treatment centers that are in our city, 75% of all drug treatment centers in the state happen to exist in Baltimore City. And the influx of guns in our city, I think, have contributed to the violent crime rate. And when I think about, for example, people coming to trade guns for drugs, and I think the last gun we picked up was actually out of Hagerstown. So we have a severe problem. And the problem of crime bothers me so greatly that I think it was about 2 weeks ago I said to my chief of staff, Tisha Edwards, that we needed to get a handle on this crime problem. Had a conversation when I was at the U.S. Conference of Mayors with the mayor of Chicago about the major problems that they're facing and many other mayors around the country. And so what I said to her was that we needed to pull together about 20 or 30 people or so just to begin to talk community solutions to crime. Because as you well know, my first few days in office, people were saying that I needed to sign a consent decree, one that was not even on my desk at that point. And I think I buried myself along with the members of our negotiating team in an effort to get the consent decree done. And you may or may not know that the average consent decree takes, for example, Ferguson with 50 police officers, it took them 13 months to complete the consent decree. New Orleans, with half the officers that we have, it took them 14 months to
Of course, Baltimore has the eighth largest police force in the United States.
In the nation. And I did not want to rush through a consent decree. And so that's why people who know me know that I'm a person of research, I'm a person who studies things, I'm a person who demands answers and want to make sure that whatever we put together was in the best interest of all the citizens of Baltimore, and I think we've been able to do that. But so in that conversation, we brought in what was supposed to be 20 to 30 people. It actually turned out to be about 95 people who came down to City Hall at the request.
And these are community leaders, ministers.
It was so broad.
Business folks.
It was Muslims. It was Catholics. It was Baptist ministers. It was ministers. It was Jewish rabbis and people from across the city. As Dr. Perman had said to me, he said, "I never had an opportunity." At the end of the summit, he says to me, "I never had the opportunity before to sit down with people who were former gang members, presidents of other colleges and universities, community leaders, different religious leaders from across the city, young people who wanted to have input in coming up with a solution to focusing on crime, including members of our police department and fire department were there. And the CEO of the Baltimore City School System was also there. I had also invited the state's attorney to be there as well. So it was a very cross-section of Baltimore, all age groups, all colors, totally represented in that room. And what I asked them to do was to insert themselves in a solution that they thought we needed to focus on that could change the outcome of what we are experiencing today. And I said to the group, it's interesting when you're sitting before a group of kindergartners and third graders and you ask them questions and the first thing that they say, "Are you going to keep us safe?" I mean, that pulls at your heartstrings.
Yeah, if it's on the mind of an eight-year-old, you can imagine
how deeply it is on the minds of so many of the people in our city. And so, again, that 30 people turned out to be 94, 95, close to 100 people. And so what I did was, after them hearing from me and the police commissioner, was to have them sit in these groups. And I think they shared ideas and things for probably close to an hour, and then to report out different suggestions that they thought would work. Some of them wanted to walk with the police, you know, through these neighborhoods and communities. People talked about additional lighting in neighborhoods. People talked about homelessness and drug addiction and all of those issues. So the next step, because this was supposed to be the planning meeting, is to bring the group back together, synthesize all of the suggestions that they've made, as well as looking at inventorying everything that we're currently doing, whether it is youth programs in the summertime or job programs for young people or programs to get people working in our city, legislation around as it relates to guns on our streets, drug addiction, and all of these things. So to put all of that together and then to have a bigger meeting with the community to say, here's some of what we've come up with, you know, here's where some of the voids are. Over in this part of the city, we don't have any youth programs. Over here, we have an abundance of things going over here. Down here, there is a place where homeless people can get some assistance, but over here, there's a big blank. And as the police department will tell you, we know where the high crime rate areas are. We focusing not just police on that problem, but are we focusing health care? Are we focusing drug addiction? Are we focusing mental health? I mean, what is it that we need to do?
And these are, of course, all long-term solutions,
Some of them are long-term, but some of them are not, because some of those things exist. And the problem is that I believe one of the things that Baltimore has not done well is to advocate on behalf of what it has the capacity to do. And so sharing that information, because, you know, people automatically assume that everything requires funding and everything requires something new. And that's not necessarily true. I think it's a combination of all of
There's
that.
Stuff that's already in
that's
place.
That's there. Yeah. And yeah. people need to know where they are. And then some folks need to be educated on how to access certain things that they don't even know about that are existing in their community. So is crime a major issue for me? Absolutely. Is it something that I'm paying particular attention to? Yes. Are we able to get some of the resources? Yes.
Yeah. You know, I was at a community meeting, happened to be a community meeting in Bolton Hill at MICA. Mm-hmm. And you were there. You spoke. Commissioner Davis spoke. State's Attorney Mosby was there. Councilman Costello, who represents that district, was there. And I think people were very happy and gratified to know that all of you do care deeply and are thinking about this and doing what you can to alleviate it. But they are looking for an immediate action. They seemed somewhat frustrated.
Well,
that immediate action wasn't taken to cut down the number of carjackings in Bolton Hill, to cut down the number of robberies on the street, to cut down the murders that are happening in the neighborhoods that are generally adjacent to Bolton Hill. I mean, these are real concerns, and people seemed a little frustrated to me. I wonder if you picked up on that as well about what can be done
week. Well, there are things that are being done exactly this week, this day. In fact, I think that if you would ask the police department, are you all, and I think I did some things very immediate. For example, when you think about the fact that the city had frozen 200 police officers' positions, and I immediately unfroze those positions to hire individuals to be on patrol in our city. So I think that there are some things that have been done immediately. You know, as I said to the city, it makes no sense to me that you would freeze police officers and you got a overtime bill of $1.6 million every other week, which amounts to about $40 million a year. But yet you say you don't want to hire 200 police officers, which would amount to about $10 million. There's some, you know, lack of rationale there, in my opinion. So, yes, we did some things immediately. We immediately put additional police officers on the street, unfroze those positions, 87 officers coming out of the police academy. But police aren't just the answer alone. We've got a lighting program now with Baltimore Gas and Electric, where I have we'll be increasing lighting by 6,000 lights through neighborhoods and communities. Bolton Hill is one of those areas that we're looking at. So every solution is not long term. And every, you know, and I think that becomes the misnomer about what we're doing. I'm not sitting there thinking about just 4 years from now or 5 years from now or 2 years from now. I'm thinking about right now. And when I think about the youth programs, you know, we didn't start our kickoff for summer jobs for young people in May or April. It's working now. I've already started calling on companies and corporations. Every day, I pick up the phone and call a company or corporation in this city to ask them for their assistance. Yesterday, I met with every president of every college and university in this city who have committed to helping us to fund our Safe Streets program. So, no, I'm not waiting on long-term solutions. I've got solutions in place right now.
Obviously, folks in your line of work take a look at best practices. They took a look around the country. You mentioned that you had a conversation with Mayor Emanuel of Chicago and others about, you know, how they're addressing very similar problems. But the city of Baltimore last year had, it's estimated in 2016, what they call a murder rate, meaning the number of people murdered per 100,000 people, of 49.8%. That's actually down 6% from the year before. The city of Boston, about the same number of people, had a 7.3.
But do you know the wealth rate of Boston in comparison to Baltimore City? That's
right.
A big difference.
Right. So, are there things that Boston is doing?
Absolutely.
That you know we should just be doing.
Their unemployment rate isn't what our unemployment rate is. Mm-hmm. Their average income is almost twice what Baltimore City is. So I think when you compare cities, you have to compare them to like cities. Boston is not one of the cities that you can compare Baltimore to. Boston doesn't have 75% of their drug treatment in Boston. So you can't compare them like that. What you have to look at is best practices in general. What is working in some cities that's not working in our city? You know, I've been in office less than, 90 days, 60 days, or whatever. And so I'm focused on every single issue that faces our city and faces our community. And when you talk about best practices, and that's one of the great things about being a part of the U.S. Conference of Mayors, you know, or being a Bloomberg city. We just got we are now a Bloomberg city, which means there are about $500,000 in resources.
This is Mayor Mike Bloomberg of the city of New York.
Yeah, but it's through Bloomberg. Right. It's through Bloomberg Philanthropies, which designates cities around the nation that ask for a certain assistance, and they evaluate the city. So I started those conversations before being sworn in as the mayor of the city. So we didn't have to wait 6 months or 9 months or another year to become a Bloomberg city. We became a Bloomberg city about 3 or 4 weeks ago, which means about six or nine weeks into my administration, which brings those additional resources into the city.
For example, can some of that money be spent implementing the changes in the consent decree?
Well, the consent decree, I mean, here's what people don't know. We placed money into the budget. I had this conversation with the governor for the consent decree. We know the $1.5 million for the monitor has to be in place. I've already getting contributions from the Ford Foundation and other organizations. So we're looking at solutions now.
All right, plenty to talk about. Now we are going to take a little break, and we will come back and have more Midday with the Mayor. Mayor Catherine Pugh is our guest for the hour. 410-662-8780 is our phone number here at Midday. Our email, midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. More with the Mayor when we come back. Stay with us.
You're listening to Midday here on your NPR news station, 88.1 WYPR.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us for Midday today. By the way, coming up on the program tomorrow, Dr. Jeff Kahn of the Johns Hopkins Berman Institute for Bioethics will join me to talk about human gene editing. A new report that sets the first international guidelines for genome editing is being released today. And tomorrow, Jeff Kahn, who served on the committee that developed the guidelines, will talk about what they suggest. By the way, on Friday, retired U.S. Senator Barbara Mikulski joins me for the hour. And next Tuesday, Baltimore City Police Commissioner Kevin Davis will be here. So we hope you can join us for those upcoming editions of Midday. If you're just joining us today, my guest is Baltimore City Mayor Catherine Pugh. You are welcome to join us for this version of Midday with the Mayor. Our phone number here, 410-662-8780. Our email address, midday@wipr.org. And our Twitter handle, if you want to drop us a tweet, @MiddayTomHall. Madam Mayor, let's talk about the schools. The school system, and I had Dr. Santelises on the program a week or two ago, facing a $130 million deficit and the specter of laying off 1,000 staffers, which will include some people at North Avenue, but also a lot of folks who are currently in the classrooms. I mean, after the uprising in April of 2015, everybody pointed to the importance of education, to the importance of concentrating on children and the upcoming generations to fix some seeming intractable problems that exist in some of the neighborhoods in our city. And here we are facing, a real dilemma and a real problem.
Well, let's be real clear. The school system is run by the board of commissioners of the school system and the CEO of the school system. I want to be very clear because there's a very thin line that the ACLU and others have made sure that the city does not cross, and that is that we don't run the school system. However, we do provide funding for the school system, and as you well know, another $12 million has gone to a youth fund designated by this city for schools. So my hope for the school system is that they be able to overcome their deficit. I've gone to Annapolis to ask for additional monies for the school system, and the city is scraping its coffers also to see what we can contribute to the school system. So I don't profess to run the day-to-day operation of the school system. I think you've already had that conversation with the CEO. But what we are asking for is to be able to appoint school board members to the school board so that we can be assured that people who sit on the school board understand their role and responsibility to that school system and to that CEO, and more importantly, to the citizens of Baltimore.
So having more input on board members of the school system, is that a first step to the city retaking control of the school system? Because that's something we talked about in the campaign.
It is a step, yeah. It is a step to making sure that those who serve our city serve in the best interest of the citizens of Baltimore.
The governor has proposed a budget that includes a $42 million cut for the school system. Are you optimistic that that'll be reversed? Where do you think
I'm very optimistic about the school system, but what folks need to in terms of the school budget, and I think you need to understand the formula that we, the legislators, put in place some years ago, long before I was even a legislator, that favored cities like Baltimore, where the city itself was so poor that it would get more of the funding from the state. Since then, I think if you remember just last year, when they looked at the wealth of Baltimore, believe it or not, the wealth gap has increased in Baltimore City. In many of our neighborhoods, it has not. But the formula in terms of how it addresses public education in the city allowed Baltimore City to be fully funded in terms of the formula. The cuts have a lot to do with the number of students who currently attend our city school system. So those numbers have dropped. If you remember, this city was built for 1 million people, now down to 620,000 to 640,000. So we are increasing in population. But you're talking about a city that lost one third of its population, and you're talking about a dwindling population in our school system. So we, as a city, have to make sure that we're contributing what we need. And oftentimes when we shrink as a city, government doesn't shrink, problems don't shrink, buildings don't shrink, the responsibilities for them don't shrink, and sometimes certain agencies have a difficulty in making their adjustments. And so that is why, as the mayor of this city, I find it very important that we understand every single penny and dime and nickel of the budget, that we understand what every agency is doing, and that we understand that there's a responsibility to collaborate as agencies and to develop partnerships outside of city government so that we can fund some of those areas where the monies don't exist.
It was exactly a year ago today, when you were campaigning for the office you currently hold, that you released an education plan. And you talked about things like expanding the use of Judy centers and universal pre-K and the summer jobs program, Saturday academies, community schools. You said at the time that by every standard of measurement, we're not serving the needs of our young people in the city schools. Do you think that those kinds of initiatives are going to be viable and tenable in a climate in which money on the state level and the city level seems to be pretty tight?
Yeah, but that's why public-private partnerships are important. I mean, you're in a city that has more colleges and universities than almost any major city in this nation. And so in my meeting with the presidents of the colleges and universities on yesterday, they talked about their role in terms of helping our school system, being able to do Saturday academies like I talked about, talking to more nonprofit organizations who want to expand Judy centers, the Family League, and all of those things. So all those things are happening.
How about the governor's proposals concerning school privatization and vouchers for private schools? Do you expect that that's going to
I don't control that. That has to do with the CEO of the school
system. Is that a good
idea
or a bad idea?
I have no idea. Mm-hmm. I'm focused on the public school system. I have a responsibility as it relates to the citizens of Baltimore to build a strong public school system.
So here's an email from Mary Alice, who's here in Baltimore, who says, Madam Mayor, I've watched as family after family have made the choice to move out of the city. My husband and I chose to stay, and our son is now thriving in kindergarten in a phenomenal Baltimore City public school. What can you tell families like mine to assure us that we've made the right choice? The catastrophic budget shortfall has myself and many parents deeply concerned about the immediate effects it will have on the quality of our children's education.
Well, first, let me say thank you for choosing Baltimore, and thank you for choosing our public school system. What I can say to you is that you will find that there's more assistance outside of the public school system to assure that we have great public schools. And having built one of the first brand new schools in Baltimore, the Baltimore Design School, which is a public school, I can tell you, and this is why I talk so strongly about who is a school board member. On our board, I said, what is the difference in Baltimore Design School and the School for the Arts and other great schools in Baltimore City? What is the difference between those schools, the Green Street Academy, and other schools? They have a board of directors, and they're people who are in the community who are willing to help those schools become great schools in the neighborhoods. And so what I'm saying to people in Baltimore is that we all have to be engaged, and we have first-class computers in our school system. We have state-of-the-art equipment throughout the schools, and we have some great teachers who are committed. So you've absolutely made the right decision. And what I also would say to you is that our city is growing, and that's a great thing. You talked about it just earlier about the eclectic young people who see this city as a great place to live. The other part that I believe, and I'll say this to the person who gave that question, we do a very poor job of publicizing the greatness of Baltimore. And you heard her say a great school that she's in, we don't talk about the greatness of Baltimore. You know, everybody wants to talk about crime and all the other negative things. And rest assured, our attention is focused every single day on those particular issues. Today, I was visited by a charter school. They came to City Hall, and it was about 9 young people who wanted to just showcase what they were doing in their schools and how proud they were to be in that school. A week ago, another group of young people came to City Hall. They were fourth graders, and their school is out on Moravia, but they were city students, and they all had on, there were half of the class had on safety patrol badges. And I said, oh my goodness, safety patrol. And one young lady says, yes, and the school presidents are here too. And so I said, well, tell me what the school presidents do. And so first they said the Pledge of Allegiance to the flag. And then they did a pledge that they do every morning to each other to keep each other motivated, to keep each other strong, to focus on getting a great education. And so while we have problems in the city, we have some great people in this city, great students, great parents, great young people who are excited about Baltimore. And when I sat down with the Greater Baltimore Committee and Sandy Hillman, one of the things we talked about is rebranding Baltimore in such a way that the people in the city feel good about it, as well as the people that we want to come to our city.
Messaging never hurts. Never hurts if it's done right. Catherine Pugh is the mayor of the city of Baltimore. It's Midday with the Mayor. I'm Tom Hall. Our phone number here, 410-662-8780. Our email address, midday@wypr.org. And our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. Madam Mayor, as you can imagine, the phones are lighting up. Let's go to Muhammad in Baltimore. Welcome to Midday with Mayor Pugh.
Yeah. Good afternoon, Mayor. Congratulations to become mayor. Baltimore is a very beautiful city. I usually travel MT mobility, travel all over the Baltimore. Beautiful city. Only concern I have, I live in Baltimore County. And when I'm coming from Baltimore County, I work for the state of Maryland for 29 years. So I love my city, Baltimore, even I live in the county. When I enter the city on Mulberry Road, hit Martin Luther King, there's so many homeless people there. Very bad impression. Very bad impression.
Oh, well, thank you for your call, Muhammad. I appreciate it. So, Madam Mayor, the homeless endemic for a long time.
Thank you, Muhammad, for your phone call. But let me just say this to you. We just completed our count of the homeless in Baltimore City, so the numbers aren't increasing. What has increased is the visibility of homelessness because someone has decided that every homeless person should have a tent. So now they've created tents and providing tents for people to sleep on the streets of our city. And I say to everybody in Baltimore, not only is it unsafe for them, it's unsafe for all of us. It creates a health hazard and a health problem. So we are working very closely with the homeless. You know, and people, what we have to understand is that folks don't want to just be in shelters. We need to create homes for the homeless. So I'm working with the private sector and the public sector to look at how do we go about the business of doing that. I had a conversation.
Your perception, most folks have a perception that there aren't enough shelter beds for the number of people in need. Is that true now that you've done a census?
No, there are shelter beds. The problem is people don't want to be in shelters. No, and you think about it as if you were thinking about yourself. Do you want to be in a place where you're exposed to 200-300 other people?
But
that's the danger. Much of that sometimes is in your own head, but the fact of the matter is you don't feel safe. You know, and so you got to think about homelessness as you would think about yourself. And so when I think about homelessness, and this is a conversation I have with the U.S. Conference of Mayors, when we think of Section 8 housing and what it was built for, you know, we built Section 8 housing so people could get help and get off. And the reality is that we live in a city where nearly 15 to 20% of the population lives below the poverty level. And so we got to do something to fix that. That we got to make sure that those who are in public housing understand that they can be there. But at the same time, we have a responsibility to some of the people who are on the streets. And I can say this to you, having stopped and talked to homeless people, having been in homeless shelters, again, Baltimore, because of its convenience, is home to a lot of people, not necessarily people who live in our city. And this was a conversation I had with the county executive of Anne Arundel County just on yesterday about how we can come together to build places where people can live, that they have a door that they can come in, shut the door, take a shower, be able to sit down and think about what it is they need need to do the next day. We're homeless service where medical services are provided, health care, mental health services, training for jobs, drug addiction, babysitting services, and in the middle of all of that, a cafeteria where they can get their 3 square meals a day, because you don't know what their problems may be, whether it's mental illness, drug addiction.
Yeah, it's got to be approached holistically.
Exactly.
Certainly.
And so that's the kind of conversation I'm having with my counterparts in other jurisdictions, because we can't tackle this problem by ourselves, because we know that we have people who come to Baltimore from as far as Virginia. I walked into a shelter. And when I walked in, somebody said, "Oh, there's the mayor. She's the mayor." And one lady said, "Well, I don't know her." I said, "Well, and you are, madam?" She says, "Well, I'm from D.C. Well, I mean,
staying in a Baltimore shelter.
Yeah, but you can't just turn people back. Sure. But we've got to, and I say it every day, we've got to deal with the homelessness in our city. We've got to deal with the poverty in our city. And at the same time, we've got to focus on how we keep middle class folks here. How do we, the 2 fastest growing populations, 18 to 34, how do we make our schools great so that they will continue to stay here in our city and raise their families? The 55 year of age and older, those are among the fastest growing populations. So how do we make our city and the business community that's growing in our city, how do we make our city safe, convenient, and healthy for everybody?
Let's talk about the business community. Let's talk about some development issues. We have a few folks waiting to talk about the schools on the phone. We'll get back to them if we can. But the Cross Street Market was slated for a renovation. There was a development corporation, the Caves Valley partners, who were going to do it. And then all of a sudden, or maybe not all of a sudden, but after a series of meetings and some complaints from various constituencies, they've apparently walked away from the deal. We have a email here from Elizabeth in Federal Hill, who says, "Madam Mayor, would you be open to establishing a committee of the existing merchants, community members, and representatives of the Public Markets Corporation to come up with a new plan to accomplish a much-needed renovation of Cross Street Market?" What happened down there?
All I know is that the developer who was willing to put certain monies in there, because as you well know, the city also has a $20 million deficit. So they were partnering. My understanding was they were partnering with the communities. They had met with community groups. They had met with the city council person. And so this plan was in place and they were moving forward. The complaints them, in their opinion, people in some of the folks' opinion, were not addressing some of the needs of the community, the people who were in the market. But yet people realize that Cross Street Market needs to be redeveloped. And so certainly we're open to whatever the community wants to do. And their council person is meeting with us and we're talking at this time.
Is this a start from scratch thing again? Or do you think you can resurrect the plan that's been on the table for a while?
I think everything's on the table right now.
Mayor Catherine Pugh is our guest. 410-662-8780 is our phone number here at Midday. Our email, midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. When it comes to things like development and making a climate good for small business in particular, you are a small business owner. You have a store over in Pigtown. The $15 minimum wage bill will likely pass with this new council. Mary Pat Clark suggested it and offered it in the last session of the council, and it did not make it through. But there's a very brand new look to the city council now. 8 of the 14 members are new, and most, if not all, have voiced support for a $15 minimum wage. You've had some concerns about that. If that bill lands on your desk, are you going to sign it?
Well, let me just say this. About the $15 minimum wage. First of all, I don't know if you all have really looked at Mary Pat Clark's proposal, because the $15 doesn't come in effect till 2026.
Right. It's gradual. So, the way the state minimum.
But I'm saying, but the press should say it in such a way that people can understand that if the bill passes next week, wages aren't going to $15 an hour.
Not right away.
2026, this is what, 19? This is 2017? So that's 9 years from now. Okay. Mm-hmm. So I think that's the first
just
thing.
Just like the state minimum wage.
Right. So I think,
It's not going to get to 10 until 2020.
But again, I think we ought to have that conversation with the public in such a way that people really understand what's taking place. If the bill were to pass today, it would be 2026 before it got to $15 an hour, which again is 9 years from now. And The other issue is that nobody under 21 would be subjected to that. No company under with 50 or less employees would be subjected to that. We've asked them to give some consideration to a training wage for people who don't work at all, who've never had a job, and that the change in the wage doesn't even begin until 2018 or 2019 when the state's minimum wage increases. And it would only increase at the same rate that the state's minimum wage is increasing. And then I think it becomes 60 cents or something like that after that. And so I'm not finished reviewing and reading the bill, but I'm understanding it better.
There's talk in the General Assembly about a bill that would disallow individual jurisdictions from setting their own minimum wage. And this is something that certainly Council President Jack Young has talked about. He says he's not necessarily opposed to a higher minimum wage in the city of Baltimore, but he'd like to see it coordinated with other jurisdictions. You've talked about that as well. Do you think that approach from at the state level is a good idea? Would that, in fact, even the playing field if a state minimum wage would automatically supersede any local jurisdiction, Baltimore, Montgomery, PG County, et cetera?
Well, state law always supersedes city laws. So, I mean, that's
so when it
reality.
Comes to the minimum wage, is that a good idea?
Again, I'm still reviewing our minimum wage. You know, some folks have time to do state stuff. I'm focused on, I was in the legislature for 11 years, and being in the state legislature requires state legislators to be concentrated and focused on state business. Catherine Pugh, as the mayor of Baltimore City, is focused on what's going on in her city. And when I go to the state, it's about how I get more resources for my city. And so that's what I'm focused on, not changing laws right now other than gun laws to make our streets safer. That's where I am.
All right, folks, you heard it here first. Catherine Pugh is indeed the mayor of Baltimore City, and she is our guest here on Midday for the Hour. Before we take a break, today is Maryland Arts Day in Annapolis. It's an annual gathering of arts leaders and advocates who are spending the day meeting with legislators to talk about the importance of the arts to the cultural and economic life of our communities. Part of the festivities of Maryland Arts Day includes the awarding of the Sue Hess Maryland Arts Advocate of the Year Award, and today it has been awarded to Busy Graham. She was the founder of Class Acts Art. It's now a group called Artivate, and Project Youth Artreach in Silver Spring back in the 1990s. She also founded a group called Carpe Diem Arts about 10 years ago, and she's the director of the Carpe Diem Arts Outreach Fund of the Midshore Community Foundation over in Easton. So congratulations to Busy Graham for winning that award. If you've just joined us, it's Midday with the Mayor. Our phone number, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle, @Midday. Tom Hall will have more with Mayor Pugh after a break. Stay around.
You're listening to Your Public Radio, 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us for this edition of Midday with the Mayor. My guest is the Mayor of Baltimore City, Catherine Pugh. Our phone number, 410-662-8780. Our email address, midday@wipr.org. And our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. Let's go to the phones. Elliot in Baltimore, welcome to Midday with Mayor Pugh.
Hi. So I had a question. Someone was recently arrested in Highlandtown by ICE officers, and I'm wondering, I know the previous mayor referred to the city as a welcoming city, but not necessarily a sanctuary city. I'm wondering with Trump's plans on immigration and all that, where the administration stands on making sure that the city is a safe place for immigrants and refugees.
So let me just say that the police commissioner recently met with a group of folks down in South Baltimore about Baltimore City and its police department. We don't stop immigrants. We don't ask you where you're from. He doesn't do it. And I believe that was the DEA, the ICE police officers, the problem is that they have, and he talked about this one yesterday, they have across their chest, they say police. And we've asked them to give consideration to how they present themselves, because we don't want people thinking that they are police, because that's not the case. We don't do that. This is a welcoming city. We are a city. And as I said before the Democratic Party on Saturday, this country is a country of immigrants. I don't know why people have a tendency to forget that, that, you know, many of us, black folks, came here as slaves, but we were still immigrants as well. And most folks in this country are immigrants. The Statue of Liberty in the harbor says, bring me, you're hungry, you're tired, you're poor. And we've changed that. And I think 9-1-1 changed the way this country looks at people coming into our cities and into our state. But I think we have to remember who we are, first of all. And so our city is continuing to be a welcoming city. We will continue to, and I think, even at the legislative level, I was right there when we passed certain laws as it relates to how we treat immigrants and provide education and opportunity for people to live in this country. And I will continue to be that person who focused on that kind of legislation and understands that, and have said strictly to our police department, and they don't stop immigrants. That is a federal situation. And one of the things that he asked us to understand is that this is not something that we're doing. And we would hope that the Trump administration would give consideration to the fact that our cities don't want that kind of
activity. There's a lot of publicity about a number of ICE raids, the Immigration Customs Enforcement Agency having raids and deporting people over the weekend in particular. Are you aware of any of those raids happening here in Baltimore?
Just the one.
The one that the caller perhaps was alluding to. Mm-hmm. And the term sanctuary city is a term that the Trump administration has shown some umbrage in using. Is that a term that you think we should be applying to Baltimore? Do we qualify as a sanctuary city?
We qualify as a welcoming city.
It's also the fact that the state government has control over the police. Is it not true? Because there's a sort of an old anachronistic law.
No, but the state
law
doesn't tell you how to run your police department. They do not. Our police department, our commissioner, has full control of the police department and has been very clear that they would never perform any negative acts against immigrants in this city. What we want folks to do is to continue to be supportive of our immigrant population, to assist them in every possible way that we can as it relates to jobs and opportunities and education and anything that we can do to be helpful to them to become full citizens, we will.
Mayor Catherine Pugh, our phone number here on Midday, 410-662-8780. Our email, midday@wipr.org. Our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. Again, a few calls waiting to be on the program to talk to you a little bit more about schools. Before we get to those, I do want to talk to you about the Trump administration and its at least allusions to infrastructure money becoming available to cities across the country. Have you heard anything from our congressional delegation, Congressman Cummings, Congressman Sarbanes, or Senator Van Hollen, Senator Cardin, about the possibilities of Baltimore receiving any money for that kind of infrastructure development?
Let me just say, we have a great delegation, and we had one of the greatest senators of all times in Barbara Mikulski. And right around the time after I was elected, I sat down with Barbara, who said to me, here's some certain things that you must do. One is to put together your letter for your congressional delegation, and you should focus on infrastructure needs. And the fact that our senator gets to replace her on the same committee, the Appropriations Committee, where most of that monies will be coming through, is important to the city. I've had conversations with our new senator around infrastructure needs. As you well know, we're under a federal mandate to fix our water system. You know, it was really disheartening. I don't know if you heard about the bank and the bridge problem that is occurring in California. You cannot continue to neglect these cities.
The dam. And
right. I attended a conference as a senator, U.S. Conference of Mayors. And they talked about the $300 billion in repairs that are needed for bridges in this nation, that on any given day, you know, something could happen. And I think about that conversation this morning on the news about how we have a tendency to ignore these problems because we don't, you know, we don't have the money. We don't see our way towards the money. And so I said in that conference, help me understand, if you got $300 billion in need for bridges, what's the plan? What is the plan to fix those bridges? And the response was, we have a 2.5-minute video. I said, and on what station are you going to play that? on what airways is somebody going to give you 2.5 minutes to explain to the American public that we must invest in our infrastructure and especially our bridges. And they said, well, this is what we're doing. They showed it. I was so bored. I was bored stiff. I said, well, let me give you all a commercial. Car coming across bridge. Bridge crashes. That could be you if America doesn't fix its bridges. It's that simple.
You did an event the other day. So, excuse me for interrupting, but I want to make sure we get to a call or two before we leave. About Project CORE, which is Governor Hogan's commitment of about $75 million to tear down vacant buildings and to, you know, put some more green space or some various other uses for areas around the city. The Hogan administration has said that the process of doing this is slowed down considerably. It's slower than they wanted it to be. I'm sure it's slower than you want it to be. They mentioned difficulty getting permits.
Yeah, he said it was slower. He didn't say it's slower now. He said, I look forward to working with this administration. And so one of the issues.
So you're in Broadway East, and they were
right.
Bashing down the buildings as you spoke.
Right. But the issue has been around our permitting process. And our permitting process was not online. Our permitting process is now online, and so you can get through that process much quicker. We've done that in the last few weeks that I've been in office as well. And so, but the question for us becomes, what do we do with those spaces? How are we developing these neighborhoods and communities? And this is why I said one of the things I did was I took my administration's first introduction to me was to go on tours throughout the city. Downtown is important. Because we have a hospitality economy in the city. However, neighborhoods and communities are important as well. In my inauguration speech, I talked about 1563 North Fulton Street because it was a boarded up, it was a burnt out church that had been burnt out for decades, sitting on Fulton Avenue. If it were sitting somewhere else in another neighborhood in our city, we would have torn it down by now. That's disrespect to the neighborhood and the community. And so what I'm saying is we're going to be investing in neighborhoods and communities throughout our city, that we're not going to let boarded-up houses just continue to lay in our neighborhoods and our communities. Look at what we're doing over at Innovation Village off of North Avenue, changing that whole area that's now Bolton Hill and Reservoir Hill and North Avenue and MICA get to interact with each other, changing the communities. And as I said, when I took my cabinet on a tour when we were up at Liberty Heights where the ShopRite is, I said it's unfair to lure a supermarket to that Liberty Heights corridor and not think it was important to fix the Ambassador Theater across the street or to create the kind of retail.
So that the neighborhood looks better.
Or create retail around that particular area in that particular part of the city. We can do it in other parts of the city. If we can do it in other parts of the city, we can do it there as well. And I want to add this, and that was one of the things that made me so proud about the Mondawmin community, because the Mondawmin community said, you are not sticking another fast food restaurant in our community. We need a sit-down restaurant. Every neighborhood deserves.
They got a Fridays. Yeah.
They've got a Fridays, but every neighborhood deserves the same kind of amenities that we will put in other neighborhoods, whether it is a movie theater or a bowling alley or a sit-down restaurant or a cleaners or a shoe shop, whatever. We all deserve the same kind of amenities in our communities.
All right, I'm sorry.
And we're committed to that.
We have run out of time. Can't get to any more calls, but before we go, we do just have a little bit of time left. You are a very busy person.
Yes.
Very busy.
Yes.
It's Valentine's Day.
Yes.
Why am I asking? You dating anybody?
Did he ask me that over the air?
I did.
I'm Baltimore City.
You're dating
I'm
Baltimore
City?
I'm
married to the city. I've got a lot of work to do.
You're going to take the city out to the Fridays in Mondawmin tonight for Valentine's Day.
Absolutely, if I could, I would.
All right. Well, it's great to see you. Happy Valentine's Day.
I appreciate you
spending the time. We look forward to the next time we see you. Thank you, Madam
Happy
Mayor.
Happy Valentine's Day, Tom.
Mayor Catherine Pugh. We'll have more information and links to the mayor's office on our website, WIPR.org/midday. Coming up tomorrow, a conversation about new guidelines for genome editing with Dr. Jeffrey Kahn of the Johns Hopkins Berman Institute for Bioethics. The guidelines are being released today. Tomorrow, we'll talk about breakthroughs that scientists are making in the field of genome editing and what international guidelines may inform their research. And by the way, looking ahead to Friday, newly retired U.S. Senator Barbara Mikulski will join me to talk about her long career representing Maryland in the Senate. And next Tuesday, Baltimore City Police Commissioner Kevin Davis stops by to take your questions and mine right here on Midday. I'd like to thank Joe Squared for providing lunch today. Joe Squared serves coal-fired pizzas, risotto, and local craft beers. Locations and hours at joesquared.com. www.thefreedomfighters.com. I'm Tom Hall. We appreciate your listening. Appreciate your subscribing to our podcast and subscribing to our Twitter field. And we hope you can tune in tomorrow and all the days after that. Thanks for listening. Have a great day.